he will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Dr. Martin Luther King has been shot and wounded, possibly critically wounded, in Memphis, Tennessee this evening.
Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee.
They shoot an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene.
For centuries, man's freedom has been crushed, contained, or at best discouraged, and sometimes in subtle ways. In the days of Solomon, he decried that man could learn too much, that one shouldn't dig too deeply nor read too often, saying that too much reading led to the weariness of the flesh, that the search for knowledge is where Adam and Eve went wrong, thus proving that learning leads to man's downfall or his sin. St. Paul, centuries later, said basically the same thing. In 1500, Francis Bacon wrote to the king, trying to convince him that man could never learn too much, that knowledge could not somehow also contain the serpent. Yet free thought continued to be squashed. Immanuel Kant, the man who first described the Milky Way as a collection of suns in the fashion that we now know it, wrote in 1760, "There are many things that I believe that I shall never say, but I shall never say the things that I do not believe." The courage to speak one's mind. In 1760, our most precious freedom, the freedom of thought, had not yet been born. Yet, just a few years later, on the other side of the globe, sat a man alone in a hotel room, his wife dying in bed hundreds of miles away from him, as he scratched words on paper. "We find these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, with certain unalienable rights given to them by their Creator, among them life, liberty, and property." It was later changed to "the pursuit of happiness" to make sure the slave trade would finally come to an end. I'm not sure if we really understand the impact of those words. Man has never been as free to think as man is now. The Chinese dissidents didn't make a Statue of Liberty in Tiananmen Square out of happenstance. Americans changed the world. Our freedom of thought allowed men to discover electricity, the light bulb, the car, the phone, the motion picture, the radio, the television, the computer, to put a man on the moon.
Which of these men will be first to orbit the Earth? I cannot tell you.
And a spacecraft on Mars.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
It was in the American century that the theory of relativity was conceived, leading Einstein to say, "The thing that strikes me about America is the joyous, positive attitude to life. The smile on the faces of the people is one of the greatest assets of the American. He's friendly, self-confident, optimistic, and without envy. The American lives more for his goals, for the future. Life for him is always becoming, never being. His emphasis is laid on the we and never the I." So today, as we are free to celebrate, relax, think, read, say anything. Ask yourself this. Are we still more about the goals for the future? Is life for us always about becoming and never being? And are we still part of the we and not the I? You know, when Jefferson first wrote those words, they were words of treason and certain execution. But today they are free to echo throughout the land as words of the American spirit and our hope that we do hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in support of this declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Our founders changed the world with those few words. And over 200 years later, a black preacher from the South, Dr. Martin Luther King, helped make sure that the promise of liberty was real for all Americans. Free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last. Thank God Almighty.
Thank God Almighty.
We are free at last.
We are free at last.
It's Monday, January 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. There's a lot to cover today. But I want to focus a little bit on that quote that Einstein said about Americans. He said, I have to redeem my promise to say something about my impressions of this country. And it's not altogether easy for me, for it's not easy to take up the attitude of an impartial observer when one is received with such kindness and undeserved respect as I have been given in America. First, let me say something on its head. The cult of individual personalities is always, in my view, unjustified. To be sure, nature distributes her gifts variously among her children. Listen to that. This is so far out of our thinking now. It is, in my view, unjustified. To be sure, nature distributes her gifts variously among her children. But there are plenty of well-endowed ones, too, thank God. And I'm firmly convinced that most of them live quiet, unregarded lives. Is that even a goal of ours now? Is that even okay to live a quiet, unregarded life? It strikes me as unfair and even in bad taste to select a few of them for boundless admiration, attributing superhuman powers of mind and character to them. This has been my fate, and the contrast between the popular estimate of my powers and achievement and the reality is simply grotesque. It would be unbearable, but for one great consoling thought. It is a welcome symptom in the age which is commonly denounced as materialistic, that it makes heroes of men whose ambitions lie wholly in the intellectual and moral sphere. This proves that knowledge and justice are ranked above wealth and power. Do we still hold people at high esteem whose ambitions are wholly in the intellectual or moral sphere? Can you name those people? My experience teaches me that this idealistic outlook, quoting Albert Einstein, is particularly prevalent in America, which is usually decried as a materialistic country. After this digression, I come to my proper theme. in the hope that no more weight will be attached to my modest remarks than they deserve. But what strikes the visitor with amazement is the superiority of this country in matters of technics and organization. Objects of everyday use are more solid than Europe. Houses are more convenient in arrangement. Everything is designed to save human labor. Because labor is expensive, because the country is sparsely inhabited in comparison with its natural resources, the high price of labor, which was the stimulus which evoked the marvelous development of technical devices and methods of work, the opposite extreme is illustrated by overpopulated China and India, where the low price of labor has stood in the way of development. Europe is halfway between the two. The second thing that strikes a visitor is the joyous, positive attitude to life. Does that strike the visitor to America? I suppose. Compared to the rest of the world? Perhaps. The European is more critical, more self-conscious, less good-hearted, less helpful, more isolated, more fastidious in his amusements, in his reading, and generally more or less a pessimist. Great importance attaches to the material comforts of life and peace and freedom from care. Security are all sacrificed to them. The American lives for ambition, the future. Life for him is always becoming, never being. Are we still those people? Where Europe is about the material comforts of life, freedom from care, and security, sacrifice to them? Are we still the people that live for ambition, for the future? That life is always becoming and never being? More emphasis is laid on the we than the I. The fact is chiefly responsible for America's economic superiority. Cooperation and the division of labor are carried through more easily and with less friction than elsewhere. Whether in the factory or the university or private good works, they have a social sense. It strikes me that we have started a course that none of us really want to go down. I think all of us see the course that we're on, and we all know that it's bad. We all know that we're headed for catastrophe. We're headed for rocks. And it will tear the hull of this ship apart. We all know it. We all say it doesn't have to be this way. We all are tired of arguing with each other. I don't know a single soul that wants to see a bad cop. That wants to see a cop beat a man, shoot a man. And I don't know a soul that wants to see anyone beat or shoot a good cop. You know the thing that made America different is that for the most part, we had never had a government that came between us. We had never had a government that told us that our enemy was our neighbor, that we should watch out for them, that we shouldn't trust them. I suppose we had that in the 1830s with Andrew Jackson, but he was talking about non-citizens, of course. He was talking about the Native American. I suppose we had that under the English and until Abraham Lincoln, where we were told that blacks weren't fully human, certainly not American. We had that in World War I, when we were told the Germans. And later in World War II, when we were told the Japanese needed to be rounded up, even though they were American citizens. Somehow or another, though, we always escaped. Somehow or another, we still, in the end, came back together. I know people think this is corny. But I still believe in the American people. I still believe in my neighbor. I don't believe in the grand vision of all of us. But I do believe in the person who lives down the street from me who thinks differently. And the day we lose that is the day we don't turn around. It's the day when we have truly lost everything that it means to truly be an American. Every 8 seconds in America, there is a burglary. Somebody breaks into a house. Now, what do you do about it? Well, you protect your house. And the way to secure your home is through a brilliant security system built by Simply Safe. Simply Safe is ridiculously smart. It has sensors that will protect every point of access to your home. Plus, if a burglar tries to break into your home, a siren goes off to let him know that the police are already on the way. It also will wake up your family to know there's somebody that is an intruder in the house. But best of all, security for the monitoring, 24/7 monitoring, is only $14.99. $14. Most people are paying up to $50 or $60 a month. They never lock you into a contract, and it's $14 a month. So, what do you do? Well, you can continue to pay for the old, outdated security that's all hardwired to your house that you don't ever own. You're locked into a contract, or you can own this system at an unbelievably inexpensive price and pay $14.99 a month and cancel at any time because there is no contract. The only security that you should have in your house is Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Go there now. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. A lot happened this weekend. Let's see. Uranium One, there was an arrest made. Looks like that investigation is continuing, which is a very good piece of news. That involves Hillary Clinton and a lot of other people in Washington, D.C. Go ahead.
Yeah, we should point out next week we have a review of everything. This entire case, Uranium One, because it's a complicated case. It's been going on for multiple years. There's a lot of rumor out there, a lot of stuff that's not true.
It's our chalkboard, isn't it?
It's our chalkboard next week on the TV show, 5 p.m. on the Eastern.
Yeah, and it's really good. And you will understand why this arrest is so important next week. We'll talk about that. Also, the biggest shooting in American history. And We still don't know what the hell is going on, and it became even more complex on Friday. We go there to Las Vegas next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Jason Batrill is our chief researcher. He was with military intelligence for quite a while during the war, and has been with me now for about 5 years, and is following a few stories for us that are kind of the longer term stories. One of them is absolutely perplexing, and that is the Vegas shooting. This is the biggest shooting in American history. It is also a shooting that didn't happen in 1956. It happened with today's technology. It's more well documented than any other shooting in American history because of the number of cell phones, and it happened in a Vegas casino. The number of cameras in a Vegas casino are endless. And yet we know less about the shooter and what happened than I think most convenience store crimes. We have not seen any footage from inside. We don't have a real motive. And on Friday, the government dumped. Now, remember, Friday is known, if you're in the news business, Friday is known as a day you dump stories that you don't even want anybody to talk about, because it'll come out on a Friday, usually in the afternoon. And then that leaves that for a Saturday report or a Friday night report on television and Saturday in the press. Maybe it gets to Sunday, but by Monday, nobody's talking about it. It's old news. A real dump happens on a Friday of a holiday weekend. So by the time it happened, by the time it's at Tuesday, really, you're guaranteed that no one is picking that story up again. That's when they dumped this story, this update, which is even more confusing and makes things worse in Vegas. And Jason is here to tell us what they released on Friday. Jason.
So they unsealed some court documents that talked about what the FBI was going after, some of their requests for information, and some of the things that some of the leads they were going after. And one of them centered around they had these three cell phones that were in his room. And this is what I thought was really, really interesting, because he had these three, I'm just calling them burner phones because that's what it sounded like. One of them, they have not been able to get into. They have not been able to get into it. And they said it was a Google operating system, and I guess it's encrypted, but they cannot get into that phone. Now, think about during the San Bernardino attack. They, I think, got a hacker, to break into that phone.
No, it was it was front page news every day for a week. They were, threatened to take Apple to court.
Yeah, they did. They threatened to, but then they got into it. And they didn't need it.
So that happened within weeks of San Bernardino. Why have we not heard anything about this phone that is still encrypted and we can't get into it?
And why haven't they been successful? I mean, this is the FBI we're talking about. Like, you would think that they would have found a way. Like, they had the smarts enough to go outside the box, and get a hacker to do this for them. They apparently could not do that for this phone. But the point is that he was communicating with someone. Now, not only that, but he was taking, I can't remember the direct quote, but crazy steps to thwart the investigation after the fact. That's why he was using these burner phones. He was using email accounts to communicate back and forth to either himself or to other people that we don't know. Now, that's actually spy tradecraft. That is counterintelligence tradecraft.
Explain what that means.
With the emails?
Yeah.
So with the emails, it's a trick that spies are taught to do, and coincidentally, terrorists, which we can get to in a second, have also picked up on. They also do this. But what they do is they compose an email to themselves. It never gets sent, but they compose a draft email to themselves And I'm speculating on this part because I don't know if that's what they did, what he did, but they compose a draft email and they save it there. Now, whoever else will have the login credentials for that account, and they can access that anywhere. That so way, it never actually goes over the airwaves.
Another way that this was utilized was General Petraeus when he was having his affair. That's how he was talking to this woman. Exactly. He would just type something, save as draft. Someone else, she would log in, look in the draft folder, and they would update their conversation there rather than sending it.
So the head of the CIA trusts these counterintelligence. These methods work. You know, the encryption on phones works. These types of things work. Now, he was told to do this by someone, or he just researched it and did it himself. But the point is that...
And he had several of those mail sites?
Multiple. Yeah, I think I read of at least two.
And we don't know what those letters to himself said.
We know of a couple of them that they talked about in these court docs. One of them talked about, hey, you should check out this AR with the bump stock or something like that. And there was something else talking about how thrilling an AR is or something like that.
Okay.
Again, you can't tell if he's talking to himself or this is somebody else going back and forth. They couldn't tell. Now, he's doing all this because he doesn't want people to find out after he doesn't want the investigators after the fact to follow his trail. Why is he doing that? Now, I've studied these cases from my last job before when I was with a threat assessment and protection company, as well when I was in the military. But assassins do not follow this type of profile. This is not the profile of an assassin that just wants to become famous. Most of them, that's what they want.
Yeah,
he's
avoiding fame as much as possible.
Exactly right.
Yeah. He doesn't want people knowing the motive. He doesn't want to know people to know the story of how he did all of this. You'd think of as a person who's just like trying to set a record. Right? I killed the most people. That's kind of would be at least part of your motivation.
Or the other is, he's a guy who's gotten in trouble. He owes a great deal of money to some nefarious people, and he's desperate. Either one of those. Mm-hmm. I want to be famous, or I'm desperate. You don't do this.
Supposedly, he had the cognitive ability. They're saying he might be crazy, but he had the cognitive ability to go through the steps that a high-level Al-Qaeda operative or a spy would go to mask his hide his tracks.
And that sort of works with some of the things we've learned about this guy, in that he was really a meticulous person. He was really a mathematical thinker. You know, he would go and do all these things at the casino to try to get advantage. And you know, he was that type of guy, that gambler's brain.
Right.
So some of that is consistent, right? You could see him being a very meticulous person, but why... What's the motivation?
That's the question.
Right.
Why? And who is he? In my mind, he's protecting some person or multiple people. That's what it sounds like. Now, another document that came out in this release was that his girlfriend might have been a little bit more involved in this than what we actually thought. Now, apparently she told the FBI that, you're probably going to find some of my fingerprints on some of the rounds because I helped him load some of the magazines.
Yeah.
Now, that's a pretty big deal. Now, apparently, she put the little caveat on that. Well, but I didn't know he was going to attack anybody.
Right.
But
yeah, she said she did this regularly for him, right? Like, it was one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of magazines. He's shooting a lot. It's not implausible that she could do that, but it is an interesting detail.
Yeah, my children and everybody's fingerprints in my family are on the rounds that we have loaded for weapons that I have that we go taking to the, you know, to the shooting range. So, you know, that's not uncommon.
That would happen. It is interesting, though. We've seen this in a couple different cases. The Pulse nightclub shooting being the other recent one is that it starts out as, by the way, we know the significant other had nothing to do with this, had no knowledge.
And then
slowly over months, we start to learn that, you know, like the Pulse nightclub shooting, she's now saying that she knew that he was going to shoot up the Pulse nightclub. Like, that's a big freaking deal that made almost no waves. Mm-hmm. And here, like, it doesn't seem to be that dramatic yet, at least in this Vegas situation.
So he traveled a lot, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right.
And I'm trying to remember. They tried to look to see if he had traveled to the Middle East, and he had, but no real connections there. Did anybody look to see if he had traveled anywhere near the old Soviet bloc?
I don't remember seeing that. I'm not sure if anyone looked into it, but he did. What's even more damning than actually getting caught traveling to the Middle East is he was back and forth to the Philippines all the time. His girlfriend was actually in the Philippines when this attack went down.
That's right.
And she deleted her Facebook account from the Philippines.
That was the crazy detail
we just found out.
Yeah. I mean, that one was bizarre. So before it was known, or at least publicly known, who the shooter was, She first put her Facebook on private and then deleted it before they had announced it was her boyfriend who had done the shooting.
She
now,
knew.
Maybe she got an email from him right before he shot himself, and so she knew something was... I mean, there could be an explanation to that, but it didn't seem to be contained in that report. That's a crazy detail, though. I mean, again, like, before we knew who this person was, she was putting her Facebook on private and then deleting it completely. I mean, maybe she got wind of it early, right? Maybe they started investigating her. It's still not a good idea to start deleting Facebook pages when you're on investigation, but still.
I also want to point out, though, that, you know, at the time of the attack, one of the last ISIS, just want to throw this out there, one of the last ISIS strongholds and holdouts was in the Philippines, in Marawi. I think it would fall about 30 days later or something like that, or a few days later. But just going to throw that out there, because the one organization that did claim responsibility for this, which seemed so ridiculous that it just kind of went poof into the air, was the ISIS connection. They stood by it multiple times, kept going after it. I'm just saying.
My question is, why is the press not pursuing this? Now, I know some of this stuff was released on Friday because the press was demanding that they release some things. They've taken the government to court to release some of this information. But I don't see, it's odd that I don't see the press really going for this, and I don't see the government. I've never seen the government behave this way. Have you?
No, I mean, multiple screw-ups in the beginning, and no...
No, not multiple screw-ups, multiple changes that were dramatic, and not in the first few minutes or the first few hours. Like, changes to the storyline much later. And then the only real witness only goes on Ellen, where he's guaranteed to not be asked any tough questions, and then disappears. I mean, there's just too many things that aren't right here.
Yeah, there's multiple people that I think have a lot to lose if this goes... I don't really have any doubt that I think the hotel security
screwed up
some stuff up.
Yeah.
We've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
There's just so many conflicting reports, but it's so hard to get that perfectly right and avoid some kind of litigation in an attack of this magnitude.
Yeah.
It's not surprising to
me. So I agree with you on that. Some of this could be explained that the hotel is like, oh, geez, are we screwed with lawsuits? And you know, they don't want anything, you know, they're doing everything they can to cover some tracks of some things, procedures not necessarily being followed. But there's more to it than that. There seems to be more to it than that. All right. We want to get into Uranium One quickly, with Jason, and also Moby has come out and said that he was talked to by the CIA. This is the most ridiculous story I have seen. And suddenly over the weekend, it's almost like somebody called him and said, really? Because he's changed his story now. We get to that coming up in a second. So if you're like most Americans, you have an awful lot of debt and it piles up fast. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you own a home and you have some equity, refinancing to consolidate and pay off your debt can make life a whole lot easier. But when you go in to consolidate a loan, is that the right option for you? Is that the best way? Great way to tell is just make a 10-minute phone call to the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. I point out that they're salary-based because... it's important for you to know that most places like this, they give bonuses if you give out certain kinds of loans. So they're always working for their bonus. They're always working to get you into something that the bank is pushing. This is not the case with American Financing. They make recommendations based on your financial goals and those things that make sense for you. So if you are paying off your high interest debt, maybe you're realizing you're still paying a few hundred extra dollars, unnecessary PMI because you've reached the threshold for removal, whatever the case, American Financing can review your current mortgage and look to options that may lower your monthly payments or help you achieve a better financial status. American Financing. Call them now. 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Couple of stories here. I want to ask Jason Batrill, who's our head researcher and former military intelligence, a couple of things. First of all, in relation to Uranium One, there was another news dump that happened on Friday, and that is that Mark Lambert, the former co-president of the Maryland-based shipping company, was charged with 11-count indictment. Charges include one count of conspiracy to violate the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, also wire fraud, international promotion of money laundering. This ties back to Uranium One, Hillary Clinton, and the Russians, which we are going to be exposing and explaining next week in a chalkboard. Any thoughts on this one, Jason, quickly?
Really, I'm curious if this new FBI informant had anything to do with this at all. We knew that he was coming forward and allowed to speak for the very first time. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if he is starting to spill the beans and maybe there's going to be more things that come out over this, some juicy details. Maybe this is the domino one of a big, long chain. You know, we'll see.
The second thing was Moby got on radio in Louisville, Kentucky last weekend or last week.
The first time in many years for Moby. Yeah.
And he said that the CIA agents, who he knows, asked him to post on social media about the alleged Trump-Russia ties. And they came to him and said, we can't do it, but you can. You got to get the information out. And he's been, you know, obviously very outspoken about Donald Trump. He made that announcement in Louisville last week on a local radio show. And then on Saturday, retracted all of it and said, okay, the CIA did not tell me to do that, but other intelligence people did. What are your thoughts on that?
Total bullcrap.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What is he smoking?
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy, right?
CIA does not operate that way.
They don't go to people like Moby?
The old techno artist is a big target of leaks by the CIA, aren't they? That's the way that works.
No? Depeche Mode. Wait till you see what they tweet.
Back. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
It has been 3.5 months since the worst mass shooting in modern American history. The shooter killed 58 people, wounded more than 500 others, and we still don't have any idea why. Why hasn't a flood of information hit the public by now? I mean, in this day and age, when leaks to the media drop almost daily, we haven't seen a single frame of security camera footage of the shooter inside the hotel. Why? The only thing law enforcement seems sure of now is that they can't nail down an accurate timeline for the attack. But this happened in a casino. There are more cameras there than Great Britain, than any prison. This is bar none. One of the strangest investigations in modern history. New court documents were unsealed on Friday, and then rather than clearing anything up, they left us more confused than ever. The motive is a mystery. Much of what has to do with the steps that the shooter took to keep everything secret is just starting to come out. The FBI said that the shooter planned the attack, quote, meticulously, and took many methodical steps to avoid detection of his plot and to thwart the eventual law enforcement investigation that would follow, end quote. Why? Why would he do that? The shooter used multiple email accounts to plan the attack. Not one, but three cell phones were found in his hotel room. One of those phones is so well protected that the FBI hasn't figured out how to unlock it. That doesn't make sense. If there was no motive for the attack, if it was just a deranged man with a gambling debt, who was he talking to via multiple email accounts and secret burner phones? After this new dump of information, the explanation that we've been given does not fit the profile. Assassins don't do these type of attacks. They don't worry about the follow-up investigation. To the contrary, they want people to know. This suggests that the shooter was protecting someone. Was it his girlfriend? Could be. Court documents revealed for the first time that she actually helped the gunman load some of the magazines, and she deleted her Facebook page right after the attack, before he was known to be involved. Did she know the attack was going to happen? Did he reach out to her? Who else was involved? These are the answers that may be locked in that cell phone. These are the answers that we should be asking, and the government should be transparent. When they hide secrets, that's when trouble really starts. Americans deserve the truth.
It's Monday, January 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
For 50 years ago, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And America seemed to get better for a while, and we have gone backwards. Did we actually get better, or were we just avoiding the real issues? Tonight in Dallas, a very brave man is looking to King and his legacy, and is sponsoring a course correction conversation. And it brings people together that I think all of us would welcome see come together. But for some reason, it seems like there are forces that want to keep us all apart. Alton Sterling was killed by the police in Louisiana. If you remember that horrible video. He was down on the ground, and the police officer just pulled out his gun and put it to his chest and shot him. This is what sparked a lot of the violence and the reason why three officers were killed in Baton Rouge shortly thereafter. Alton's family coming together with two of the widows of the slain police officers to find reconciliation. And the man who is putting it all together is here with us now. He started Urban Specialists. Well, I'll let him explain. Pastor Omar Jawar, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm so good to be here. I'm glad to be here. Feel good to be here. Thank you.
So tell me what you're doing tonight, because, I mean, you've got the victims on both sides. You have people like Ted Cruz coming. You have all walks of life coming tonight.
Yeah. You know, Glenn, first, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be on today and what you do. I mean that sincerely. That is step of faith. Thank you, because we need that affirmation. But what we're basically doing is what you described. In the course correction, it is saying that there is a way that we can reach a higher ground. And the way we reach it is we have to share each other's pain and not point at those who are in pain and say it may be your fault. You got to figure out where do we have that commonality. And no greater pain is that than to lose a loved one instantly. And see, for the last 20 years, I've been working in the area of gang intervention and youth violence. So I've seen how death can become that sting that never goes away. And so you just kind of bury it and you hide it and you just kind of move on and you never really heal. And so the way you heal is you got to expose a little bit of that pain, and then you find others who are going through the same thing. And then we join together and say, let's heal together through a shared process of coming together and using our conversations to build and not tear down.
So Martin Luther King talked about reconciliation, and he refused to use the language of winning and losing, because
absolutely,
for one side to win, the other side has to lose.
Right.
I'm shocked at how many people are missing this point today. We're all talking about winning, 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 winning.
Mm-hmm.
We're all going to lose if that is the case.
Absolutely.
And people view reconciliation as weakness.
Right. You know, there's this new mantra that says the toughest and the bravest has to be the most arrogant and the most visceral. But that's not true. See, when you're in a jungle, you don't want to become more animal, because you can't be more animal than animal. You have to become more human, more civil. You have to go up, not down. But it's easy to just live in your emotion and let that guide you. But it only leads to a sense of debilitating frustration. You never get better. You know, I tell guys all the time, man, it may be fun and fashionable to be ferocious, but it leaves you empty. And you can't feel that emptiness with one thing, and that's love. And love causes you to be vulnerable. It's like we have figured out, now I'm a Christian, and I tell people I wear my Christ out loud. You know, it's not hidden. So Christ teaches me that redemption is the point. It's not the step. It is the point that we can be redeemed. And you can't be redeemed unless you've been at that place of brokenness. And so we're saying that God uses broken vessels. And so we bring in these broken vessels and say, maybe we can build a puzzle, call you and me and you and you, and we figure out how this works, because there is good and there is redemption in all of us. We just got to be bold enough to say, let's do it.
So are you finding... are you finding this harder or easier as the days go on?
Oh, man. Tonight, we're going to have a great time. Tuesday, I'm going to sleep until Thursday, because it's much more difficult than I thought, because I figured everyone would be excited about having a way that we heal. But, you know, man, it's so many factions, and those factions beget more factions.
Yes.
And then you have that buzz called social media that takes words and twists them and takes ideas and takes your weakest moment and make that your only moment, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very difficult. You know, like you said, I have those who are from the communities that I normally work in. They say, hold on, Bishop. You got Ted Cruz, and you got Scarface, and you got, you know, Marcus Peters, and you got Deion Sanders, and you got pastors, and is this not making sense? I said, right, it's exactly, because Jesus had a tax collector and some fishermen and a woman who had some demons and there has a chaos. That's the point of this, is that you don't know who God will use. You just got to be willing to allow him to use everyone, and don't be afraid. So you can't be afraid to do this. And so, yeah, it's much more challenging than I thought it would be.
So Martin Luther King was, I mean, it's amazing to me when you look at Malcolm X. Malcolm X was killed because he figured out reconciliation was the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King was demonized and stirred up to his death because of reconciliation. And I am shocked at the number of people who claim to be really good Christians that feel that love and reconciliation is ridiculous.
Right.
And as they say it, I almost think to myself, where is your testimony?
Yeah.
Where, what Jesus do you believe in?
Right.
Because that is his entire message.
Right. Right. You know, Glenn, now, you know, you just said those two who were trying to preach redemption, they got killed. So you just made me nervous.
I know.
So I might not show up tonight. No. But I think that what happens is, a person can get so emotional in the pain that they are suffering that they actually don't believe that healing is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get comfortable with a limp. And when someone says it may take you doing rehabilitation, but you can walk again or you can walk better, you say, I'm okay with this limp because it's easier for me to find others who are limping just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all can compare limps, you know, and rehabilitation takes some effort on the part of the person who wants to be healed, who wants to be better. I mean, no greater witness than someone who has to walk through it. I mean, the two young ladies from Baton Rouge, Tanya and Trenisha, who are widows of great fallen officers who, in my opinion, are so desperately hopeful that my job is to make sure that their hope don't leave without a witness. I have to be a witness to them so that they can witness to others that
they are remarkable.
I mean, absolutely remarkable.
They're going to be joining us here in a few minutes.
So. Yeah, and they're, you know, the way they are in truth. I mean, you know, the light that they shine. When I met them through a young man. And watch this. It was a guy named Clay Young in Baton Rouge, who is a business guy, young guy, who said, I don't want my city to go like this. You know, it's 103 murders that has happened in Baton Rouge in 1 year. And he just decided, This is not how this is supposed to be. And so he started getting people from the north and the south, rich and the poor and the preachers and this, and said, let's just go walk the community, knock on doors and say, how can we help? And it was through him, I said, what's the light? He said, man, one thing that lights me up is Trenisha and Tanya. And he introduced me to them. And their passion led me to say, I got to let the world see that they've been in pain, but they have not given up. And these can inspire you. One of the words I say is only inspired people can inspire people.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be inspired. That's why I love you. I love your passion because inspiration can get and hope can drive you when you don't have product. So you got to find people who are hopeful even when they don't have an answer. They just know this question is answerable. So we're going to keep forging forward until we find an answer. And then we start finding other answers like the family of Alton Sterling who are not bitter. They're in pain, but they're not bitter. And I said, we have to show the world that even in the polarized opposites, we can find a place of redemption. And if they can do it, then we can do it.
Certainly, if they can do it,
yes.
They're in much more pain than we are.
Right.
More in just a second. Stand by. So public invited tonight?
Absolutely.
And where can they go?
Gillies. They can go online, but it's at Gillies in Dallas.
At what time?
6 p.m.
Okay. And online?
They can go to urbanspecialistsite.org/3C.
Got it. Back in a second. Let me tell you about Blinds.com, our sponsor this half hour. Completely will transform your home and give you the best customer service. Mark in Tempe wrote in and said, I heard about Blinds.com through Glenn Beck and had faith in his suggestion. Amazing service. Quick delivery and installation was a breeze. They look fantastic. I ordered more 2 weeks later and I feel exactly the same. I'm going to tell all my friends. This is exactly the experience that I had with Blinds.com, and my wife did all of the ordering and everything else because I didn't want them to know that I didn't want any kind of special treatment or anything else. I wanted to call them cold exactly the way you would. I wanted to go online exactly the way, and I had the best customer service. And I will tell you, after we met with the design specialist online, I wasn't involved. I didn't tell him my name until the very end, and he was like, oh my gosh. So he didn't know. And if that's the way that, I mean, they treated my wife like a celebrity. They'll treat you like a celebrity. You're an important customer. They'll send you free samples, free shipping, plus you get free design consultation. It's all at Blinds.com. Go there now, Blinds.com. They're the number one online retailer, Blinds.com/Beck. Their prices are always great. They're even better right now. It is Blinds.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome back to the program. We're joined today by Pastor Omar Jawar, who is a big deal here in Dallas. He has been working with the youth on the streets of Dallas with something he started, Urban Specialists. And he has been working with former gang members in prison. You also have you've kind of partnered with a former gang leader, guy who brought, what is it, the Crips here?
The Bloods. Yeah, right. Be careful on that.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to get them wrong.
Yeah.
And I got to believe that's not an easy sell.
No. I mean, to tell a guy that your characteristic is a market advantage, but your character needs to be transformed. That no matter how good you are at this, it will lead to your death or your permanent imprisonment. And for them to believe you, they have to first agree that you are a witness and that I'm not trying to use you for my gain. I'm trying to get you at your best height so you can do what God has called you to do. I mean, that was a very difficult sell, but at the end of the day, Anton Lucky, who you guys will see tonight, he has been probably the most permanent example of transformation that I see. So when I want to see what redemption looks like, I look at him.
Is this an event I can bring my kids to?
Oh, absolutely. It is absolutely. I'm encouraging everyone, bring your kids, bring your spouses. Bring this is that moment that you say, okay, this could work. I mean, this idea of us coming together could work. You got to see, this is our flare that we're shooting up into the culture and saying, just look at what I see. I'm telling you, Glenn, when you see the people, because we got so many people coming on stage and they are flawed.
Yeah.
They are obvious.
And they're on both sides.
On both sides. Yeah. You got the left and the right. Ebenezer Johnson, you got everyone, man. You got local, national, business leaders, this, that, you know, and I'm saying, can we all just get in this one room? You remember how 9/11 pulled America together and it was no longer us and them. We had to figure this out, and we had to figure it out together. I think that this is a 9/11 moment in that we are dealing with this idea of violence at its core. See, it's not just the irrational violence of someone getting shot, whether it be police, whether it be community. It's the idea that violence has become an acceptable language to how you deal with pain and conflict. Mm-hmm. And when that becomes societal's catchphrase, well, I'll just... And they deserve where you get into a dangerous ground, because you said something earlier. I was listening to you that it was 58 people murdered in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And we are now saying, man, what was the trigger that caused him to pull that trigger, that caused him to do that? And we really don't know. I'm with you. We need to find out. But at the end of the day, it's because the culture has accepted this language of violence and annihilation as an acceptable form of dealing with conflict. And then when you can put them in bags, when you can label them, so you can say, he's on the right. And so that was right, that's a left. When you can do that easily, then it becomes, with the gangs, this is what I learned dealing with gangs.
Hang on, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to introduce you to two widows of fallen police officers who are remarkable.
Glenn Beck. What? Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome back to the program. It's Martin Luther King Day, and we wanted to spend some time on something that is happening here in Dallas tonight at Gillies, and you were invited to attend. I want to take my family has plans tonight, but I can't think of anything more important than this, and my kids should witness, because we are all of us are going to face this. We all have to decide who we are and where we're headed. Bishop Omar Jawar is with us. He is the founder and CEO of Urban Specialists, and he is doing a course correction conversation tonight. You can find out all about it at urbanspecialist.org. But he is bringing some people together that don't agree and are feeling pain on both sides. And I want to introduce you to a couple of them. Trenisha Jackson, she is the widow of Montrell Jackson. He is the Baton Rouge police officer that was killed a couple of years ago, along with his partner, Brad Garofalo. Did I say that right?
No.
No, so can you say it for me?
It's Garofalo.
Garofalo, sorry. Okay. And his widow is here. Tanya, welcome to the program. I'm glad to have you both here.
Thank you.
I'm sure that this is one of the last places you want to be. And Trenisha, you are really, you have a heavy mantle to carry, because we, all of us, I think, remember your husband's Facebook post just a couple of days before he was killed. And if I can quote, "I'm tired physically and emotionally, disappointed in some family and friends and officers for some reckless comments, but what's in your heart is in your heart. I still love you, because hate takes too much energy, but I definitely won't be looking at you the same. I swear to God I love this city, but I wonder if this city loves me. When I'm in uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks. I've experienced so much in my short life, and these last 3 days have tested me to the core. Look at my actions, because they speak loud and clear. These are trying times, but please don't let hate infect your heart. This city must and will get better. I'm working in these streets, so any protesters, officers, friends, family, or whoever, if you see me and you need a hug or you want to say a prayer, I got you." How did the two of you not let hate infect your heart after your husbands were taken?
Like Montrell said, it takes too much energy. And we're already going through enough grief and pain. We just didn't need hate adding to that.
And I feel as if his Facebook post was so prophetic, and it was just what I needed to survive, not to let hate infect my heart. And so I've been doing that ever since he has closed his eyes. I have not been letting hate infecting my heart. Even when it's times when I get upset and I'm angry, I go back and I read that post and I remember what it said, not to let hate infect my heart. And that's what I've been doing. I've been walking like that every day.
Since July of 2016, you both, my wife hates it when I say this to her, but you both look so tired.
We do. You get used to sleeping next to somebody for so long, 16 years, and then all of a sudden it's gone. So,
did your husband have anything similar? Did he feel this coming at all?
He did. He didn't have Facebook. However, when the Dallas incident happened, I had made a wreath to represent the Dallas police, and he had actually sent it out through a mass email to the sheriff's office people and other law enforcement, and saying that he was praying for them and that he had their six.
So we were, you know, obviously in Dallas, and my staff was down on the street when the shots rang out, and the protesters were cowering behind trees and cars with us. And we started talking to each other because of that. And we actually heard each other, I think, for the first time. What is it that you guys are expecting tonight? Come together, and why are you here? What do you hope is going to happen?
I want everyone to realize and understand that we all experience pain, and at the end of the day, it's the same pain. And basically, to fix that pain is for us to unite. We need to love on one another and just basically get it together. Because I know in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in 2017, the murder rate was through the roof. And it's just so much hate. And at the end of the day, when someone loses their life, each family member is hurting, and it's pain. And we want our city to get it together.
How about you, Tanya?
Absolutely. hoping to come together and learn something from one another. Even though our pain is the same, but we could always learn something every day. And learning from their pain and them learning from our pain will definitely help.
You're going to meet the family of a man who was held down on the ground by police officers and then shot in a horrific video. And they are coming tonight. And that video is what stirred people up to kill your husbands. What, have you met the family yet?
No.
What are your thoughts going into it beforehand?
I was a little reserved at first, but it's not about my personal feelings. I need to let some of that go, and that's what I'm doing, so I can move forward and so I can heal.
And I say at the end of the day, those kids have lost their father, and my son has lost their father, has lost his father as well. So I'm looking to see what I can learn from her, and I'm hoping she's looking to see what she can learn from me, because we both are hurting.
Pastor?
You know, and I'm just, see, that's what I'm saying. Listening to them, it makes me say, stop playing. Get serious with things that we take real serious and they're not. For them to be able to speak on it and having, you know, this is not a long time, it's, you know, a year ago, and they are here trying to figure out how we can be a part of something that they have experienced personally. It is just, it's mind-blowing to me. So I'm hoping that everyone sees them and feels what I feel, a sense of obligation to do what Montrell said. That was strong, and I read it, and I know that this is the time. I know that this is the moment. I'm just, and I feel, and you know, again, yeah, I'm a pastor, so in my spirit, I hear it. I hear the sound. I know it's time for us to do this, and it might be difficult, and it is. And she's right. I've been asking them to do stuff. I know it's been difficult because I know it's time, and there are others who can gain from this moment. It's if we manage our emotions and get this message out right, this could be a start of something.
It's it was a really difficult conversation that we had here in the studios right after the Dallas shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we brought in people who were protesting, and we brought in people over the other side, and to break through the rhetoric, to break through the stuff that you're reading online and the, I want to say from the people who, you know, there's some people that want to watch the world burn.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is a lot of the people that were there were horrified by this and they were frightened for their own families and children, just in a different way. But we had that in common, that we weren't listening to each other. They weren't hearing our fear. We weren't hearing their fear. And all we were hearing was the rhetoric.
Right.
And that's really hard.
Well, you know, before we took a break, that's what I was about to say about gang members. What I learned from gang members is the way you take someone's life is you have to dehumanize them. You have to make them an object. See, the way a Crip kills a Blood is he's a Blood. The way a Blood, because he's a Crip, and they use all of these words, but that takes away the idea, no, that's a man, that's an individual, that's a family member. She said it right. Those families feel the same pain. And I'm going to tell you something, no matter who it is that passes, no matter how treacherous they were, a person is still shocked and devastated when there is no chance for them to do whatever it is their life trajectory should do. So I try to remind people that humanity is a precious gift. Let's not take it for granted. And sometimes we have to be reminded that this is real. This is not fake. This is it.
We're at a place now where
we are dehumanizing each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing to me. I was on Facebook last night and or Twitter and responding to some people who were just filled with, you're not a person because I disagree with you.
Right.
And is there a turning point? Is there a place to where it's too late?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping not. I'm hoping not. That's why we're having this course correction. But I believe that there's a place where we have so many casualties of that type of behavior that we, even when we recover, we will recover at a lower state than we were. You know, there's a time when things can become apocalyptic in the way we approach it. I mean, you can become the survival of the fittest. See, whenever you get into survival mode, then you can suspend rules. So people say, I'm in survival mode, so it's okay. I do this because, yeah. And that's what we have turned, ratcheted up this noise. You know, I want people to understand, this is Tanya, and it was Brad. I want people to hear, that's Tanisha, it was Montrell. I want them to hear that. I want you to go through your cycle. I want you to hear that when you hear Andrika. She called him a CD man. She didn't call him Alton. She, you know, that you, when you see the little babies, they are babies. I saw her baby yesterday, and he's a big boy, too. he's going to be big. And, you know, I understand that this is very full circle. But sometimes we can try to shrink it because we want it to be appropriate to the pain we feel. And that's not what you do. You can't do drive-by analysis on complicated issues. You got to stay there for a moment. I didn't know you went out when the protesters did it. I didn't know you had people here. I did the same thing. We had the day after the shooting, we brought the protesters and the police together, and it was a very emotional, very tough conversation.
We got a lot of heat because we actually interviewed the family of the shooter and just listened to them and didn't glorify the shooter by any chance, but we really need to listen to each other. We really need to listen to each other. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for being such a good example for your husbands and their memory, and we are truly sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
God bless you both. So just before Christmas, the head of FEMA, his name is Brock Long, told the media that he wanted everybody to understand a couple of things. One, FEMA is broken. Two, the system is broken. And three, this is the new normal. So in other words, if disaster strikes, you have to take care of yourself. Next hour, we have a couple of people that experienced what happened in Hawaii this weekend. Two very different experiences. One, a family with a small child in a hotel room, cowering in the bathroom for 45 minutes as they were waiting to be possibly vaporized by a missile that never came. And a commander who was on his way home. He said he broke every traffic law to get home. But their stories are very different. One, because one was prepared. The second one had no way to be prepared. They were on vacation. Right now, My Patriot Supply would like to make sure that your family is prepared for anything, even loss of jobs. Get a 102 serving emergency food kit for only $99. If disaster strikes, you're not going to have to worry about FEMA. You will be able to be part of the solution. Call 800-200-7163, or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. You'll receive breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 25-year storage date, and you can get it right now, 800-200-7163, or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, I the thing that I think made me popular at one point was something that I actually pray that I shed and that I lose, and that is certitude, certainty. There's something about following somebody and listening to them when they say, "I know, follow me, this is it," and it's very powerful. But it is also, I think, a disease that has crept into us that we are all so certain that we know and that everyone else is wrong that it stops us from hearing and listening to each other. I pray that we can be a society that is less certain of what we know and more certain that we don't know.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
All right, the Department of Homeland Security has begun processing applications again for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, a.k.a. DACA. This is going to continue to operate long after a deal on the program is reached later this week. Now, is this a surprise to anyone? Shouldn't be, because both Republicans and Democrats want DACA. They always have, and so does the president. Trump, after all, has a big heart. He has boasted about his big heart, on several occasions. Last year, he said, quote, "We are going to show great heart. DACA is very, very difficult subject for me. They are here illegally, and they shouldn't be very worried. I do have a big heart. We're going to take care of everybody," end quote. Trump may have also said that he would immediately terminate DACA, but that was so 2 years ago, so I'm not sure which is which now. DACA is dangerous to both political parties because they are legislating based on emotion when we should be legislating based on the Constitution. It's not the children of illegal immigrants' fault that they are here. They are innocent, but their parents are not. So what is the consequence? Is there a consequence for breaking the law? If not, do we have laws? These are the conversations that we need to have. When it comes down to it, make no mistake, DACA is amnesty. We'll have to make the decision to accept or reject amnesty. Apparently, in Washington, they are telling us that the American people will accept it.
It's Monday, January 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The U.S. Pacific Command has detected a missile threat to Hawaii. A missile may impact on land or sea within minutes. This is not a drill. If you are indoors, stay indoors. If you are outdoors, seek immediate shelter in a building. Remain indoors well away from windows. If you are driving, pull safely to the side of the road and seek shelter in a building or lay on the floor. We will announce when the threat has ended. This is not a drill.
That had to have been absolutely terrifying. That's what was heard this weekend in Hawaii. There was an alert that cruise missiles were coming, and they were nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. Do something. What? Imagine the panic that you would have felt. We have a couple of people that I want to talk to and just feel how they felt over the weekend. The first one is Adnan Mezewala. Adnan, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. You were visiting the Hawaiian Islands. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You were there in the hotel room with your wife and your two-month-old.
2 month-old. Okay. Yep. Along with my parents, yeah.
So tell me what happened. What time was it, and how'd you find out, and what was it like?
So I don't recall exactly what time it was. What I do know, it was prior to checkout. We were just getting things together. We were about to, you know, utilize our additional time that we had to go down to the beach prior. When we all of a sudden got a notification and picked up the phone. Now, it went off on my phone and my father's phone, who was up in the room with us while we're getting one together. And it just kind of threw us off initially. I don't really know how to react when you have a notification like this. This is very much Cold War era kind of mentality where all of a sudden, you know, they're teaching kids to get under their desks. So, of course, you know, in this modern era, it's not something that we're prepared for to start conceptualizing. So, you know, initially I thought it was a mistake. I thought it was nothing. And then shortly afterwards, it kind of really dawned on me quickly that I can't take this lightly. And so we quickly started putting on shoes, grabbing our essentials that we would need and preparing to run. I took my 2-month-old, put him in a stroller, and also had a carrier with us just in case I had to pick him up and go. The hotel was very responsive. We were staying at the Hyatt Regency, and they told us to kind of stay indoors and stay in our room. But, you know, you're on the 36th floor, too. And, you know, if a missile attack's happening, the last thing I want to do is be 36 floors above ground.
So first of all, I'm trying to just, because I tried this weekend to picture in my own head, the first thing that I would think of was, this is bogus. This is not happening.
It's true.
Right?
It's true. I mean, you know, today's era of technology, when I saw this notification, first thing in my head is, this can't be true. Second thing was, well, the U.S. has enough technology that if a missile was coming up, I would assume that they'd be able to knock it out in the air prior to even coming to land. But then, I mean, you start playing the scenarios.
Okay, so wait, how long did you live in that world before you started to go into, wait a minute?
I think it took us all of about 5 to 7 minutes, I would say, before I was just like, all right, nope, let's take a different route here. And you could tell, like, as minutes would go by, there was just, I felt a little bit more uncertainty, a little more distraught, and a little more panic to it, to a point where I remember telling my parents in kind of a stern voice, like, you need to forget about your bags, grab your passports, grab your wallets, put your shoes on, we have to go, you know, in a very stern voice. And it was just at that point that I realized, like, you know, this could be for real.
So did you call or did you turn on the TV or the radio? Did you at all think this is not, it's not that it's, you know, that it's not going to happen, that the missiles, but that it was a hack or it was a joke or it was something?
No, I mean, so we definitely turn on the news kind of simultaneously. I think in our political environment right now, these are real potentials, you know?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, we talk about hacking systems, whether it's a hack or not, you know, these are things that have been constantly been reported on, whether North Korea will actually act, whether the U.S. will defend itself, to a point where we really need to start understanding the consequences of these conversations and what this is leading into. I think in general, people are going to take this scenario itself and start contemplating whether they need to do drills, whether they need to say, do I need to have preparedness at home? Just remembering the, you know, I'm too young to remember. I wasn't alive during the Cold War era. So, you know, thinking about just whole the Y2K scenario when 2000 was coming around, how people were starting to prepare. It really feels like something along those lines where people are going to be like, okay, well, we need stockpile food. What if this is going to be a real scenario? I just can't fathom how this will play out in the long run. You know, a mistake is a mistake. That's fine. But this also opens like a can of worm, you know, that we as a general population are going to start discussing this and in a more serious tone.
Adnan Maziwala, he is in Hawaii. He and his family were in Hawaii for a 40th anniversary of his parents' marriage. And the, you know, false missile alert went out. Was there a time that you saw or anyone saw or anyone in your party started to panic at all, or was everybody pretty calm?
I think it was a more progressive kind of nature. I think my wife definitely so I would say my dad initially, he reacted by, you know, quickly taking my son and putting him in a stroller and then putting him in the bathroom because that was the one place that didn't have windows. It was furthest away from the windows. My wife slowly started gathering essentials, things that my son would need. And you could see in everyone's faces that as minutes would go by, the more anxiety would build up in terms of, you know, the reality of this warning. You know, I think a lot of us were on the brink of, you know, emotional kind of hitting that limit where we felt like we were about to cry. As soon as we found out this was a false event, we were just kind of like, wow, I can't believe this just happened.
What has changed in your mind or your life or your family? Was anything clarified for you?
Nothing was clarified in the sense of, you know, this was a mistake in terms of the broadcasting system. Things like this can happen. There's a human factor in a lot of things. I think we're really kind of, you know, we're enjoying our vacation. We've moved past this in terms of being able to continue to celebrate my parents' anniversary. But in what has really kind of become a more of a reality is that we as you know, U.S. citizens listening to conversations that are happening on the sideline, and you know, we are bystanders of this. And I think that's really come to become a more of a seriousness where, you know, no longer can we really accept these conversations that are happening regarding, you know, who has the bigger missile or who wants to be the first to act. It's kind of more of a, we need a more peaceful society in general. People shouldn't be living their life in fear. And I think that's what's kind of soaked in to us here as we move forward, is that how do we come and reconcile and enjoy the moments we have, you know, through our lives without constantly being worried that something may happen.
Adnan, thank you very much. God bless. Now, there was somebody else on the island. This is a retired naval commander. His name is Tom Bellett, and he is on with us now. Tom, where were you when the alert came, and did you believe it right away?
Oh, good morning, Glenn. Ironically, I was helping a friend here in Kailua Town on Oahu's windward side install a generator as part of his emergency preparedness plan. I received the alert on my cell phone, and I made my first decision immediately to return home instead of sheltering in place. And on my way home, I contacted my wife, and we both arrived home at about the same time.
Did you both take it at face value when you heard it?
We certainly did. Both my wife and I are career military officers, so we take warnings and preparedness pretty seriously. We received the alerts on our phones, and it began to occur to me, though, as I was driving home, that we weren't seeing the other warning systems activate, such as the newly restarted warning sirens, and there was no broadcast interruptions on radio, TV, or TV. And very shortly after we both got home, we both began to receive the messages via email announcing that the warning was called off, was a false alarm.
So,
and then nearly half an hour later, the cell phone message announced a false alarm as well.
So we just talked to somebody who was in, I think, the Hyatt on Oahu, mm-hmm. and, you know, is away from everything. You are a guy who, you sound prepared. Were you this calm? Were you going home to hunker down and you knew you could survive? And
well, we've had some pretty serious lessons learned, I think, in the last few months, especially in Puerto Rico, where we've seen what happened recently and have to acknowledge that we're going to have to take care of ourselves here. And consequently, we're prepared to do so for up to 60 days, as recommended by the state of Hawaii.
At any point, did you think, if this is real and it is, and it's from North Korea, there's really no, you know, it's kind of like the duck and cover, hide under your desk. Well, that's not going to fire. That's not going to stop the, you know, fires of hell. Was there any time that you were noodling this through going that, well, this is not going to work?
Well, we certainly hope for the best, but we plan for the worst. You're correct. We don't have a lot of infrastructure here in place to do much more than to seek the best option possible to protect ourselves from an initial blast, the ensuing radiation, and then, of course, the loss and denial of services across the spectrum. Communications, power, water, everything that we take for granted is going to go away for a while, and it could be quite some time. So, yeah, it's a pretty scary thing to think about. Fortunately, we have a plan. Fortunately, we were able to execute that plan fairly easily. We're very, very relieved, obviously, that this was not only a false alarm, but that no one was hurt here in those initial few minutes of responding. That could have gone a lot worse.
Did you see any panic from anyone?
No. As a matter of fact, I didn't. It was a pretty quiet Saturday morning here in this residential town that's fairly far and away from the streets and hotels and high rises of Waikiki. I did notice some folks that were driving with a little bit more sense of urgency.
I may have been one of them. But you, of course, kept to the speed limit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course you did. Of course you did. All right, Tom, thanks so much. And we're glad Hawaii is safe. And man, what a frightening Saturday morning you had. God bless.
It was may we live in interesting times, Glenn. Come visit us.
Yes, we do live in interesting times. Thanks so much.
One of the most interesting things about the Hawaii thing from this weekend was that we've all played that game where if you had 30 minutes to live, what would you do with it? And an entire state basically had to answer that question and attempt it on the fly. And I wonder how many of them were happy with their decision. And on the other side, someone like Tom, who's actually prepared, you don't think about it the same way. If you're prepared,
you notice that.
Yeah, that was really, I thought, interesting.
Yeah, he was just like, we just went home. We knew what we were supposed to do, and we executed it.
It's not the last half hour. You go and you put a plan into place, and you survive it. Yeah. Right, like that's your plan. It's a totally different way of thinking about it from I think most of the tourists that were there were just like, oh wow, we're about to die. We should hug each other really tight. You know, I mean,
I wonder how many couples. You know, we're like, we're going out.
Oh, yeah,
we're going
out. You got to go for it at that point. It's at least a good argument from the guy for once.
It's like, look, come on.
I mean, half an hour. It's... And she says, I don't want to spend my last half an hour doing that.
Not with you. All right.
Let's go down to the pool, see if I can find somebody interesting.
But if you're not prepared, this is not a commercial, but if you're not prepared, you should call My Patriot Supply and be prepared. Because it's like Stu said, when we were in New York, we talked to nuclear experts, and they said, the most surprising thing is, you'll survive.
Most likely, you'll survive a nuclear attack unless you're right at ground zero.
That's right. All right, paying off debt can take forever, and it piles up fast, but it doesn't have to be that way. If you own a home and you have some equity, refinancing to consolidate and pay off your debt could make life a lot easier, but that may not be the right decision for you. But the people at American Financing can help you find the right thing. They have access to every loan in the industry and will only offer refinance options if it makes sense for your financial goals. Now, maybe it's cashing out to pay off the high interest debt. Maybe it's realizing you're still paying a few hundred dollars unnecessary PMI because you've reached the threshold for removal. Whatever the case is, American Financing can review your current mortgage and can look for options that will lower your monthly payments and help you achieve a better financial status. American Financing. You're going to get a straight, effortless mortgage experience, so call them now. American Financing at 800-906-2440. It's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So I saw Steven Spielberg's The Post this weekend and really enjoyed it. Thought it was really good.
I was a little worried because I'm interested in stories like that.
Yeah.
But I was a little worried it would be so annoying in our current context with the media praising itself.
I was really concerned. I think I went because it was Spielberg, and I thought if anybody's going to do this right, it's Spielberg. And I thought there was actually, I mean, I'm sure nobody in Hollywood or on the left picked this up, even though they always write it themselves. They write it and they produce it and they think about it, and yet it doesn't ever seem to connect with them. But at one point, or several points, they talk about this has been going on forever. This was Truman. This was Eisenhower. This was Jack. And they start to realize at the end, one of the big points is the press should not be friends with politicians. You know, Jack was using them, keeping them close to bring them in on the inside so they wouldn't question these things and they wouldn't report those things.
Right. And now with the press, it's very important that they're adversarial to the administration.
Right.
That message connects. But it didn't connect when they had
Barack Obama
and tons of media members going directly from the media into his administration and
exactly
and
right.
otherwise.
Exactly right.
It didn't seem to connect at all.
So I thought it was a really balanced telling of the story. I didn't feel any kind of propaganda in it. I thought it was an interesting look, especially if you lived during those times, how much life has changed.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So it was a good weekend for Stu. Hawaii was almost vaporized.
I don't care about anything else.
People living in crap hole countries.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't care about any of the news. Yeah. I only care about the Philadelphia Eagles, who are still mysteriously and magically alive.
Yeah. Pat Gray is joining us now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, there's
no way they win this weekend.
There's no way they win.
I mean, I hold out hope, of course. They are the underdogs again.
Just be too disappointed. Don't hold out.
What year were you born?
1976.
What year did they first go to the Super Bowl?
They went to the Super Bowl in 1981 and 2005. Yeah.
When did you start becoming an Eagles fan?
I don't know exactly.
This is all a mystery.
Really early.
This is all mysterious.
What I'm wondering is it possible your fandom is the reason why they don't win the Super Bowl?
Well, they didn't win anything for 16 years before my birth. The last time they won the championship was 1960. So
they felt a disturbance in the force.
They felt it coming.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
It was like a million voices cried out and then was suddenly silenced.
It's possible. Yeah. It seems unlikely.
Just from Stubergear's birth?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
It certainly hasn't helped them, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
So so you're going to Minneapolis.
Very excited to take
I'm
in
sorry,
a little,
what?
Very excited to take in Minneapolis in the winter. It's a great location for a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
What was it, like 9 this weekend?
If it was 9. The first day I checked as we were getting closer, you start looking at the temperatures of these cities.
Mm-hmm.
And Minneapolis, the first day I checked, it was -4. That's just the temperature, not the wind chill and all that other stuff that gets on top of that.
Yeah.
So I'm really they do seem to have days in the 30s.
Would you go if it were outdoors in Minneapolis?
Oh, yeah. You'd still go. You suck it up. I don't know how. I just layer.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, there's no way you suck it up.
Oh, I suck it up.
4 below 0.
This guy won't suck it up and go
and
to
outside.
He won't go to Israel,
right?
But
come
he'll
on now.
Suck it up and
I'd go to Israel if they had the Super Bowl there. And then they start throwing that thing in Jerusalem, and I'm there.
Maybe Trump will get that done too.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
The fighting Jews and the Palestinian tigers really doesn't sound like
no. It would be a strange event. I don't think there'd be real excitement for it in Jerusalem,
right.
But.
All right, so Pat, what is on your mind today?
I'm seeing some signs of some common sense being injected into the Me Too movement. Have you guys been following the French women and their plea to have a little sanity?
Really?
Before you take away sex between men and women completely? It's interesting that any kind of sensibility would come from France. 100 French women...
Well, it's about sex.
Yes, so. That's true.
Yes.
And they pride themselves on sexual liberation.
Yes.
And that was part of their point, was that you're going to ruin sexual liberation here. Men aren't going to be able to hit on women anymore. And they've, of course, are being beaten practically to death over this. The final passages challenged the fight is kind of sends the message that the challenge ahead for France is that, you know, maybe the seduction thing at work and the seduction thing that they have going on in their society is going to have to stop. And I don't think these women, Catherine Deneuve, do you remember her?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Big French film actress. She's mm-hmm. the most probably noted person in this. And it looks like they're getting a lot of pushback from the Me Too movement people.
But there is a difference. It's like, who's the guy on, is it Netflix or Amazon that's getting so much heat right now?
Netflix, Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, tell that story.
So he is he's an actor on, he's a comedian, does the show Master of None on mm-hmm. Netflix, which is pretty funny. So the story was that a young woman, is given the name Grace in the story, comes from some publication called Babe or something. I've never heard of it.
That's not demeaning.
So Ansari meets this woman at a party. Mm-hmm. She's excited about it. He's a celebrity. He initially brushes her off, but they find out that they have something in common with photography and wind up talking. He texts her when they get back to New York, asks if she wants to go out. She's excited. She spends a lot of time choosing her outfit, texting pictures of it to friends. They have a glass of wine at his apartment. They go through dinner. They rush through dinner at an expensive restaurant. They go back to his apartment. Within minutes of returning, she was sitting on the kitchen counter and he was apparently consensually performing a sex act on her. So you have that going on. Then she decides, he's like pressuring her to go further, right? It seems like everything's consensual. Yeah. Eventually, she becomes overcome by her emotions at the way the night is going. And she says, "You guys are all the effing same." And eventually leaves crying. Okay.
Wait.
My gosh.
Wait. You've just done this on the kitchen counter.
Right.
And when he says, maybe we should retire, you know,
to the boudoir.
To the boudoir.
Right, right.
You people are all the same. I wanted to do something different in the sink.
Right.
And then in the fireplace. And so, okay. All right. Okay. So it's an odd line, but she's drawn the line. And she's leaving.
Right. She decides to leave eventually, although she at one point says, yeah, you know, maybe we should take it a little slower. Comes back out. They sit again. Things get fired up again. They go through the process again. So there's a lot that goes on here. And all of it seems consensual. At the end, she feels a little bit, I don't know, I guess.
Like, guilty.
Maybe guilty. And decides to leave. Now, there's been an interesting pushback on this from the other side saying, wait a minute. This just seems like kind of like a somewhat negative hookup experience, not sexual assault as it's being presented.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the Atlantic has a big story about this from Caitlin Flanagan. She writes, was Grace frozen, terrified, stuck? No. She tells that she wanted something from Ansari and she was trying to figure out how to get it. She wanted affection, kindness, attention. Perhaps she hoped maybe even to become this famous man's girlfriend. He wasn't interested. What she felt afterwards, rejected yet another time by yet another man, was regret. And what she and the writer who told her story created was 3,000 words of revenge porn. Together, the two women may have destroyed Ansari's career, which now is the punishment for every kind of male sexual misconduct from grotesque to disappointing.
That is unbelievable.
James
Franco is going through a similar situation.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing that the sexual revolution was all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was about, hey, I'm a woman and I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're two consensual adults, yada, yada, yada. No. Now, if you go and you do whatever you want and maybe you're fighting in your own head, I don't know if I should do this or not, but you do it. What? It's the guy's fault? Do you have no self-will?
No agency.
There's no agency.
No responsibility.
None.
All the responsibility is on the men here.
You have to express it. They can't read your mind. Have to express that this is, you know, something you don't want to do if you don't want to do it. If anything happens after that point, it's the guy's fault completely. But it has to be expressed in some way.
The safe word is no.
The most damning of the accusations against James Franco is a lot like that. He was involved in a relationship with a woman. And they were out one night, and he asked her to perform a little movement on him. And
are they in the kitchen?
She said, no, they were in, I think they were in a car. And she said, can't we do this later? And he said, no. And he kind of nudged her. And so she said, so I did it because I didn't want him to hate me. Well, yeah, okay, that is your, you just chose
right.
So while did you hear, in a relationship to do that.
Did you hear about the other one that came out this weekend?
Which was? Okay.
Steven Seagal.
I knew he was being accused of something. I don't know what,
so
though.
They are rape. I mean, it's some bad allegations on Steven Seagal, and the LAPD is investigating. And some pretty important women are saying rape. However, there's one that is, she's my hero. She's my absolute hero. She said she was told by her agent that she was to meet Steven Seagal like at 9:30 at night in his hotel room. And she was driving. She's like, my agency is pimping me out. They're pimping me out to this guy.
Wow. Okay? Yeah.
And that is something that I have heard. We've never talked about. I've talked to some people in that world. And that is something
that happens, right?
Happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Happened with Weinstein, too.
Yeah. So the agency was pimping her out. She goes, she knocks on the door. He's, you know, exposed. And he says, come on in. And she says, I don't think so. And slams the door and leaves. She said, so nothing happened. But,
ta-da!
But nothing happened. And if he would have tried to do something, I would have kicked his ass. Now, A, you wouldn't have because it was Steven Seagal, but good for her.
Yeah.
She knew who she was. She knew her value. That's the problem. Yeah. People don't know their value.
Yeah, it's interesting. And two things on this. One, this isn't a contractual conversation. This is a dance between a man and a woman. And if you're not able or willing to at least indicate that you are not willing to go to the next step, there's not a checkbox of 12. Here's the 12 things I'd like to do today. And please check off the ones you're comfortable with. But we're going to get there.
Well, we've talked about the bit that you did on Wonderful World of Stew a couple of times where, you know, you got to have the couple sign in triplicate and you got to have a permission slip for every single act and every movement. It's coming to that. I mean, that is not outrageous anymore.
It is. And the other thing is, remember when, like, I don't remember which president of France it was had affairs. I mean, I guess they all seem to have affairs in France, right? And conservatives were calling that out and saying, look at this, the Frenchmen having affairs everywhere. And we were mocked by liberals who told us the only natural way that men and women react at work is to have affairs with each other. It happens all the time. All these other countries are enlightened and they don't care. They don't hold their politicians to any standard. Mm-hmm. Now we're told that there can never be any contact. You basically can't even talk to a woman or your job's going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
So here's the bad thing. If this doesn't turn around, if the French are right and it starts to kill that relationship, the free market will produce what you want.
Sex robots.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. It will.
You will stop that action between men and women.
You will.
Certainly single men and women.
When these robots become real.
Yeah.
I mean, and then that leads you to the consciousness of ASI, and they'll kill us all if we're using them as sex receptacles. They'll kill us all when they gain consciousness, if they ever do. But we, in 30 years, are you telling me that you couldn't see us as a society that just has the scientists, you know, make our baby, I'm going to gene splice, I'm going to have a perfect child, you know, kind of the Gattaca kind of thing, to where you're gene spliced and I'm going to do that and we're going to have a baby, but not that way. I'm hooking up with this device.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens.
The device apparently never has a headache, is never not in the mood, right? You don't have to worry about any of those things. You don't have to worry about cuddling afterwards.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it could really change.
And you don't have
things
to worry about if she's faking it. She is. She's faking
she,
it.
Yes.
She's fake. So, yes, she's faking it. Thanks, Pat.
Well, with Glenn Beck, it always ends with AI is going to kill us because we've abused our sex robots. That's the way the conversation typically ends these days. I don't know. Maybe Pat will get
better
it.
Than a, is that better than a bullet in the head?
It always ends with a bullet in the head. I think the sex robot one is superior. I don't know. Pat. Maybe Pat will get into that today on Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Also on iTunes where you can get the podcast. Did you hear Ansari's statement, by the way? Aziz Ansari, his response to this?
No.
Listen to this. In September of last year, I met a woman at a party. We exchanged numbers. We texted back and forth and eventually went on a date. We went out to dinner, and afterwards, we ended up engaging in sexual activity, which by all indications was completely consensual. The next day, I got a text from her saying that although, quote, it may have seemed okay, end quote, upon further reflection, she felt uncomfortable. It was true that everything did seem okay to me, so when I heard that it was not the case for her, I was surprised and concerned. I took her words to heart and responded privately after taking the time to process what she had said. I continue to support the movement and all that is happening in our culture. It is necessary and long overdue. I mean, it's like...
It's bad.
How do... You know, you never know.
If you can change your mind after the fact and then say, well, you just pushed me. Well, no, I thought it was consensual. Well, it seemed fine at the time, but I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
That's insane.
You can't retroactively make your mind up like that. That's unfair.
But in today's world?
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. All right, goals for 2018. How about just having a good night's sleep? Casper Mattress. Casper will help you get that good night's sleep. It is a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and the comfort so you are perfectly balanced, and that those mixture of foams is patented by Casper. It's breathable, so you're guaranteed to sleep cool. The mattress built to last years. Now, you can get your Casper right now, and you can try it out yourself for 100 nights. Try it out. You know, everybody else is, you go to the store, which jacks up the price of the mattress. You go to the store, and you lay down in your clothes and, your shoes, and you're there for 20 minutes, and you think that's a good night's sleep. Have you ever purchased a mattress, and it wasn't a good night's sleep, and then you just lived with it? You don't have to, because they've cut out the middleman. And so you don't have to go into a store because they know that's not a good test. So they ship it to you in this little teeny box. You open it up and you sleep on it. You sleep on it for, I recommend, at least 2 weeks. Sleep on it for 2 weeks. If you don't love it, you just call them up and they come. There's no hassle. They refund every dime, and they pick the mattress back up. So start your year off right. Get a guaranteed great night's sleep. Try it in your home for 100 nights. Casper.com/Beck. Go to Casper.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck. You'll save $50 on the purchase of select mattresses. Terms and conditions do apply. It is Casper.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So we're talking about how you can't retroactively, after a sexual encounter, say that you didn't like it when you said you liked it in the moment, or it was consensual in the moment. That doesn't mean
say that, but
it's ridiculous. Though.
You can say, "Oh, that was great," and then the next day go,
right? But it's not. You can't say it's non-consensual.
Correct.
Retroactively.
Correct.
Denise writes in on Twitter at World of Stew that retrospect is called your conscience. It's telling you that you should not have done that. Millennials don't understand that concept. They just immediately blame someone else for feeling bad and regret. That's true and scary.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.